you know, because the martial arts are changing and evolving. We're going to have a youth teenager on our show today, but this young lady is doing a lot of things in the martial arts. She's making a lot of good forward steps, and it's my pleasure to have on our show today, Miss Layla Akana. Layla, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm great
and getting better. So, Layla, just a little bit of background about yourself. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself? Wow, since you were 4 years old. Well, you know, you got started a little bit earlier than me, because I kind of got started when I was 6 years old. You know, I don't know, did that make me better than you or make you better than me, but whatever, you know. You know, so basically then, how long have you been practicing?
For about 9 years.
Wow, 9 years. And tell me, when you got started, what was the thing that made you mostly interested in karate instead of like dance or, you know, ballet or something like that? It was also fun?
Yes.
So what's fun about people throwing kicks and punches at you?
It's just something about it. It just has like the energy is moving and you're moving around and touching and kicking, and it's just the energy.
Okay, that's fair. So let me ask you a question. What part of the martial arts do you like better? Do you like better weapons or the kata or the sparring or a combination of all? What do you like the best?
Mostly kata.
And why?
But kata is like my focus.
Okay. And why did you pick kata opposed to fighting? Yeah. Well, you know, I've learned myself. You do it now, but I've learned myself to appreciate kata, because as you know, I'm the kind of a person who I like sparring better than anything coming up in the martial arts. So that was one of my things I did. I did kata, but I like the sparring part of it and the weapons part of it more. Maybe Bruce Lee had something to do with that. I don't know, but I mean. You know, while I'm thinking about that, who had the most impact on you in karate? What person, what thing, what impacted you most about? What person impacted you more in karate, you believe? Okay. Your sensei kind of made you want to do kata?
Yeah, he said, do what I feel most confident at and I'm most flexible.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Oh, okay. Oh, wow. Well, that's pretty cool, you know? That's... Say again? Yes. Yes. And that being... let me see. When I ask you that, when I say who, you don't want to particularly name anyone in particular, I guess, but like with me, if somebody would ask me, well, who inspired you or didn't, you know, I would say right away, Bruce Lee. But who really had a lot to do with me getting into karate or deeper into it was my uncle. You know, he really, he started teaching me. His name was Joseph Burrow, and he was a Marine Corps. He was a Marine. He was in the Marine Corps. He was a Lance Corporal. He, unfortunately, he passed away in the Vietnam era. But he kind of influenced me in karate, and that led me on to meet Sensei Jackson, who definitely was a mentor to me. You know, like you were saying, you know, kind of helped me to find my way to the karate like that. Do you have any favorite style? Okay. You know, with Shotokan, mainly the katas are so structured and so beautiful. And when you look at Shotokan, you'll see in like Wataru and some of Isshinru and some of Mudokwan and some of the Taekwondo, you can see the Shotokan kata influence in that. You know, if you watch it, you can see like, well, everything took a part of what Shotokan done and took a part of it. And that's interesting because Shotokan is not a rule. They got Washin rule, Isshin rule, you know, different rules, but Shotokan is just Shotokan. Ain't that interesting? Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Just so happened, I pretty much like Shotokan too. And I also like Baklun Pai Palun, which is White Dragon Kung Fu. I like that also. But Shotokan kind of took me over and won me over. So now, I know you like kata. So tell me a little bit, when you're doing kata, how do it make you feel? Oh, great. Whoa, that's very nice. I like the way you said that. So who would you like to meet? If you had someone, you know, a karate person that you would like to meet, who would be the person you would like to meet then? If you had opportunity. And who is that? Okay. And you like the current world champion, so you like the way he performs his katas? Oh, great. Okay. That's fair. And which one of the katas that he do that you would like to, or do you do any of the katas he do, or would you like to do one he particularly like to use in competition? Well, if he's out there listening to the way, hopefully he may give an opportunity for you to meet him. Or if one day I have him on the show, I'll kind of like hook y'all both two up together. You can talk at the same time. How about that? Would you like that? It'd be amazing. Right? That's very good. So let me tell you, let me ask you something also. When you're getting ready for a competition, because obviously you do competition. Have you been in any competition? Okay. You started at 9 years old? Competed. No, okay. And how did you do at your first tournament? Wait a minute. Your first tournament. Wait a minute. No. Let me get this right. Your first tournament, you competed in kata. And you got, you competed in kata. What else did you do? Weapons? And you got first place in both of those events, and you also got the grand championship. The first tournament. Wow. Wow. And so from that point on, you was kind of like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. More passionate about it. So tell me, how do you get ready for a competition? What do? Do you go and meditate somewhere, or do you just practice, or you do a combination of both? How do you get yourself prepared to do an event? Okay. Well, you know, the beginning of a million miles start with one footstep. And a lot of times we have to be able to go out there and step on the floor or on the mat just to get ourselves prepared to take that journey. And once we start on that journey, I tell people that, you know, what is contagious is winning. It's very contagious. And if you go with a winning attitude and winning spirit, no matter what you do, you're going to always feel that you succeeded. It's not the outcome so much of what the other person is doing or what the other judges may be scoring or whatever. It's the self-expression of yourself and how you felt about how you done. Because believe it, you know, we know when we've done a good workout or we've done a bad workout. And we've done a good competition or we've done a bad competition. You agree? Yeah. Yeah. Right. You step on the floor and do what you like. Oh, man, you know, I could have did this better. Or, wow, that was pretty good. I feel really good about my techniques and how I performed that. So that's all amazing. Now, you know, I keep asking myself this question because I see most of the time young women doing karate and they are so focus. At your age, a lot of times they change their focus. What is your goal? Okay. And by competing for the U.S. team or the Olympics, do you think that's the that's like the highest, the pinnacle of your career, or be the pinnacle of your martial arts? You wanna get your 10th degree black belt? So, yes. Well, let me tell you something. The journey. My sensei told me, he said, you know what? Because I was such the clumsy guy when I started, he used to always tell me, you know, you got to go home and you got to try, you got to train, you got to practice more. Whatever side you're weak on, you do more on that. One day you're going to reach your goal. And I believed in him. He made me believe in yourself. Sort of like what you were saying earlier. And with that mindset, having someone around to encourage you and keep encouraging you, the 10th degree is definitely in your future. It's definitely something that you can do. But remember, it all takes time. And you put that time in, I think that's when you get the gratitude of the wisdom of getting knowledge. You know what I mean? And you can pass that knowledge on, you know, by being called sensei. And once your students see that, I never thought I would obtain a 10th degree black belt. For the longest time, I really kind of didn't want to get promoted. My sensei passed over 30 some years ago, and I kind of took over the system at that time. But later I was promoted up by a very, very well-known martial artist who took to me, and I trained with him some and done things with him. But that wasn't really the thing that got me. I think once I realized how long I've been practicing it and how much a part of karate is me, I think the 10th degree became something that I knew I earned and I deserved. You know, I see some people walk around with 10th degrees and they're 40 years old, 30 years old, and they okay with that. But you know, when you put in the years, you'll know yourself. And all I got to say is I believe that is a very, very, very possible and probable thing that's going to happen for you, you know? So now we've been talking about the martial arts. What other kind of activity do you like to do? Do you like anything other than that? Do you like baseball, softball, bowling, anything else? No way. You like volleyball. I always want to be a professional volleyball player, but never got to an area where I could really do it. And when I was coming up in my high school, they didn't do nothing like that. You know, only later I seen people at like the parks playing it and stuff like that. Then, of course, out California is a big thing, I guess, because of the beaches in Florida. But I was raised up in the Pennsylvania. And that's interesting. Volleyball. Okay. Well, you know what? I know you got a couple things that you are got your eyes set on. Any in particular tournaments you looking forward to doing in the next couple of weeks or a couple of days or months or whatever? Oh wow! So the AAU Nationals. How you look at the competition AAU opposed to something like the what you call this other one on the 4th, the Kunu? Okay, so how do you look at those two tournaments? Which one do you think is more, prestigious or more a competition for you?
Across the nation.
Okay. So the AAU is like everybody know those. Okay. Now, how do you feel about local tournaments or small tournaments? Oh yeah. They get to see you and you get to see them. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of them probably be like, hey, you know, this time I'm going to do better than you. And you like, no, or you like, okay, I got you or whatever like that. You know, in my day, we had a lot of back and forth trash talking. But of course, when I was fighting, I meant everything I said. You know what I mean? I really did. And, I remember this one particular time, this really good fighter I met named Tony Overton from New York. We became best friends. And that's one thing I find out that with the martial arts, you know, you make friends for life. It's like a family, you know, it really is. You meet people and you get to know them and they get to know you. And you look forward, like you said, to seeing them at competitions and things like that. It's like an extended family, you know. Do any of your other brothers or sisters or siblings do martial arts? Wait a minute. Wait, did you say you started at 4? You better watch out. You got another one coming up behind you. So you know you got to keep paving the way. That's great. Oh, so wait a minute. Your little sister, which is your baby sister, who is 4 years old, she likes sparring. So I guess You're going to be encouraging her to be a fighter. Okay. I thought you know, if I like kata and my brother, who's younger than me, want to do fighting, I'll be like, no, you want to do kata. Because, see, this is the thing about kata. You know, or if I was a fighter and he wanted to do kata, I'd be like, no, you want to do fighting. Because this is the thing about fighting. But you're like, if that's what she likes to do, then I'm going to let her do what's best for her or what she likes to be involved in. That's pretty cool. That's letting somebody evolve on their own, you know. I guess I'm a little bit like biased when it comes to sparring, because that's one thing I like the best. And, you know, that's what I always was into. So during your journey in the martial arts, you're seeing yourself start at 4 years old and now at 13, 9 years later, you still love doing martial arts. You don't see no time when you may want to walk away from it, or do you want to teach one day? Do you want to open a dojo one day, or have a dojo one day, or run a dojo? Or do you see yourself just incorporating martial arts with your business? Like, if you know, if you become a rocket scientist, you want to make sure that that's kind of part of, you know, what you do too. Mm-hmm. Well, with me, and I've been very fortunate, because I never thought a little kid from Alabama like myself would make all these different transitions and get into the martial arts the way I did. But I just took to it sort of like you did. And it literally have taken me all around the world. And I'm looking forward to some things. I've been to a lot of different countries already, and looking forward to going to many more countries and sharing the martial arts. And, you know, one thing about that, no matter what country I went to or been to or I'm going to, it seemed to me that the martial artists always speak the same language. You know, you may meet some arrogant people, of course, but that's okay, because once they get to know you, even their arrogance, it seems to let themselves down when they get to see your humbleness, which is a strength. You know, you could be as good or better, but I believe in being humble to a point of like letting people, you know, develop themselves, or they can have an opinion about me, because what people think about me really don't make me who I am. That's what martial arts have taught me. My self-worth is based on how I feel and the principles that I live by, or that is that everyone have the right to be here and everybody have the right to do what they want to do, long as it's not interfering or harming anyone else.
Yes.
You know? So, the martial arts, that's one thing I can tell my kids, that, you know, if you do them, and, you know, to me, when I have a young person come in and they're interested in martial arts, I always ask them, what do they want to do? And I always, and if I, when I'm talking with them, I'll tell them, you know, if this is what you want to do, I'm going to get you there. But you got to really want to do it. And if that's what you want to do, I'm going to give you everything you need, especially the mental aptitude to get there, because believe me, a lot of it is mental, you know. Yeah, it's very mental. There'll be a lot of pain coming to it. Like, you can do like I don't know, 1,000 push-ups, you know, but mentally, you know, you say to yourself, I could do 1,010 and get it done. You know what I mean? Physically, you might be only able to do 1,000, but when you put that mental aspect in it, you can go beyond that. And that's what I think transcends when you're doing martial arts. Now, if you had to choose one weapon, Layla, what weapon would you like to perform with forever?
Probably a sword.
A sword? And why would you pick the katana? Mm-hmm. You know, I have that same thing. And I'm not trying to like say that, you know, I'm just saying that I love the katana because it is a weapon. I believe that a warrior weapon is a weapon of honor. And throughout the centuries, you know, the sword has represent strength, like you said. But the use of the sword, you know, you can be so powerful with it and so gentle with it. You know, you can display elegance by doing a kata with it and ferocity while you implement in the technique of the sword. And I just got up with a person who's going to come into the dojo and we're going to do actual cutting. So I'm going to learn or teach my guys how to actually do real cuts with the sword. And that's going to be a very good thing because though I practice with it, hardly ever do I use it to get to cut something, you know. But now I think I want to get into that a little bit more because I got a mindset on using that a little bit more now later in my years. And so that's one thing I'm driving to do. Yes. I love the katana. I remember at first I used to love the nunchucks. Obviously, Bruce Lee did nunchucks, so I'm like, hey, that's my thing. I don't ever think I ever seen him use a sword, but I picked up on a sword because a friend of mine got me into the sword when I first seen him. His name is Bob Elder. Used the sword. I was always really afraid to put the sword in the scabbard and take it out. I was very shy about it. And he would come over and come on, let me show you. He'd come to the dojo a lot of times and do classes with me and classes with my students. And it became easy. So then I learned that the sword really is nothing to fear. It's just like anything else. You can conquer that with your mind by knowing that you're in control of it. So that's one thing I did. Oh, yeah, it has to be. And that's one thing that I'm saying, that when you're doing that and you being a part of that like that, it's like really great to do that. You know, it's really great. And I like that part of the sword. You know, was it anything else you'd like to tell the audience before we end up our session? You know,
also, remember, I was invited to Hong Kong to compete and also give a seminar on Kong.
Great. Wow, I see a lot of great things happening for you. And, you know, I wish you nothing but the best. Of course, you know that. And on top of all of that, you know what? Anything you want to achieve, all you have to do is see it in your mind first and believe it. That's what I want to tell you. Always believe. Always. Because there's going to be people who may doubt, but don't you doubt. You're welcome. It's been my honor and also been my privilege of having Layla O'Connor here with me today. And we're going to take a little break here and we'll be right back with The Way. Thank you. All right, you ready? Okay, make sure you don't have your phone on speaker, okay? So you might have to hold it up to your ear. Okay. All right. Welcome back to The Way. This is Hunchy Henry Graves. We have also on with us today, Master Terry Bibbins of Bibbins Taekwondo. How you doing, sir?
What's up? Hey, you can stop on that master
stuff,
man. My birth certificate says Terry, not master. Let's see yourself, bro.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, Master Bibbins, as you say. Yeah, you know me. So, how you doing today?
Scheduling, the students are actually in the middle of a movie, so it's pretty quiet in here for at least the next 45 minutes.
Oh, great. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a late bloomer. I started martial arts when I was 11 years old, whereas most of the people I know, they started between the ages of 3 and 6. Fortunately for me, or unfortunately, it took for a bunch of bullies in middle school to get me out started in martial arts. But, you know, I'm from Palmetto, Florida. You know, look it up on the map. It's really small.
Oh, man.
Don't blink or you miss it. So, you know, I'm from a small town. And, you know, I just love martial arts. This is what I do for a living. Okay. And that's about it, really. There's really not much to me. Pretty simple life.
Oh, wow. Now, have you adopted anything special with your martial art training? Do you do anything outside of Taekwondo that maybe other Taekwondo schools do or don't do or wouldn't do or anything like that? Or are you pretty traditional?
I keep it pretty simple here. You know, I can't speak for all Taekwondo schools. I can only kind of give my opinion based on some of the academies that I visited throughout my training. But in my school, we like to keep things pretty simple and pretty traditional here. By simple and traditional, I'm just going by, you know, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. You know, goal setting, teaching children how to set goals, how to accomplish those goals. But, you know, what I've noticed in my academy is, you know, teaching children how to push through the pain. But, you know, we run a lot in my school. Like a lot. This morning, they had a 1 mile run this morning, and I don't accept any excuses. I run, my staff runs, we all run. I don't see a lot of schools doing that in particular. But then again, like I said, I can only speak for some of the ones that I visited.
Okay. Well, with that being said, when you go out, do you go to visit a lot of schools or you pretty much keep it in-house?
You know, when I was younger, I used to, you know, that curiosity. In our youth, I'm still young, so I'm just saying younger. I'm be young forever. So,
oh yeah, I know that feeling.
I'm gonna be young forever.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, when I was younger, I would visit a lot of schools, and you know, the one thing that I noticed from a lot of schools that I visited was there was always some black belt that was there to show me how good they are.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, that's the one thing that a lot of places had in common at the time. There was always a superstar there that was anxious to show me how good they are.
Yeah.
It's like, listen, I don't really care how good you are. I'm here to learn. Teach me something I don't know. You know, give me something I can put in my bag of tricks for either business or martial arts or just something to help me become a better teacher or just a better man in general.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I, you know, that's what I look for when I travel to other academies.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't travel as much anymore.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, once you become like a school owner, a lot of that time that you had to freely travel, you have to put into the business. You know what I mean? You have
it's different. It's real. I talk to my friends about this, and you know, quite often, you know, you get a lot of unwanted advice, business advice from friends who do this for 10 hours a week. You know, they do it after work in the evenings, whereas I'm here at 7:30 in the morning and I'm going home about 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And you know, we're hanging out, chilling. And say, well, what you should do is, and usually I'm to the point now where I just tell them, say, no, what you should do is.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you know. Someone told me one time, don't take advice from somebody who have nothing to lose from the advice they give you. You know what I mean? If they don't have anything to lose, then why take the advice from them?
Yeah, and you know, I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not discrediting, you know, my friends who have full-time jobs. You know, don't get me wrong. I mean, to each its own. Some people, you know, they don't want to do this full-time.
Right.
You know, I mean, it doesn't make them any better or any worse of a martial arts instructor at all.
No, not that, but it's something to say that when you teach in the martial arts and you have a school and you devote all your time in your business, it becomes your business. And when you split that time with another, like, you know, working part time or working full time at another job, then that's not your full time business anymore. And your attention get divided. You know what I mean? It really does.
Well, you know, I tell you one thing. We're martial arts instructors that do this like for a living. We're definitely not trying to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and go to a tournament on a Saturday. That's the last.
I know. Yeah.
That's the last thing on our mind. You know, we're usually, you know, tired and pain, trying to play catch up around the house. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to catch up from everything we missed during the week.
Wow. And you say your day started at 7 in the morning or 6 in the morning or what?
Well, yeah, we put at 7:30 in the morning. I mean, my day starts at 4 a.m. with my workout because that's the only free time I really have to work out. I mean, you know, because I'm here all day. But as far as the work day goes, yeah, 7:30 a.m., these doors have to be open. Most parents here have to be to work at 8, so, you know, we have to have these doors open.
Wow. Well, you know, I remember meeting you a couple of times, and one was at a Hall of Fame event that I was hosting, but the other one...
Yeah, you know, I got my first award ever from you, first martial arts award ever.
That's interesting. Because of how good you are, I would thought that would have been like maybe the number 19 or 20th or something like that, but... It ain't a total of how many you get or nothing like that. But I remember when I met you and we was talking and how much knowledge you had about the business part of martial arts. It made me feel like a white belt or maybe even a no belt.
You know, believe it or not, man, there are some people that I've met in my travels that have made me the instructor that I am today. I mean, people not even connected to martial arts. I have a friend over right now. She lives in Germany. Her name is Mirella Shortino. And she knows nothing about martial arts, but she knows me. You know, people like her, who else? Will Lanier, he's a martial arts instructor, but he's a wonderful martial arts instructor.
Oh,
like,
nice.
If I were to put my kids in a martial arts program, that's where they would go. Don't tell him I said that, though.
Okay, I promise I won't. If he's listening, I'll deny it.
There we go. But yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of people. You know, my first ever team leader, Khalif Harewood, the man was mean as a snake when I was a private. I hated him. I thought he was a devil. Come to find out, now I use 90% of the things I learned from him as a leader. You know, the man wasn't mean. You know, he saw potential in us and he pushed us past that level. Yes. I mean, a wonderful, outstanding leader. So yeah, there's a lot of people that I've been able and fortunate enough to learn from throughout my travels to help me bring all of this knowledge and experience back to my academy.
Oh, great, great. Well, tell me, and compared to like Gojin Ryu or Shotokan, what is the difference that people look at with Taekwondo or Muay Thai or Tang Soo Do? What do you believe is a difference, or is it a difference? Or is it?
You're putting me on the spot. You're making me blush now.
Okay. Okay.
For anybody that knows me, they'll laugh. If they don't know me, well, they're probably saying, why is he blushing?
Yeah.
And I'll just leave that joke out there. But, but you know, Taekwondo itself, you know, the biggest thing is the stances. You know, I've heard a lot of people say things like, well, you know, they don't know how to do proper stances in Taekwondo. But, you know, our stances are shorter in Taekwondo, whereas a lot of Japanese arts that I've seen, and again, I can't speak for all Korean arts. I can't speak for all Okinawan or Chinese or Japanese arts. I'm only speaking about my personal experience. The stances are wider in Japanese arts, whereas Taekwondo focuses more on a normal stance, what we call a normal stance, so it's not as wide, and that's for mobility, to be able to move. That's one of the things. Also, you know, the sparring. We're talking apples and oranges now. Taekwondo itself, you know, you have WTF Taekwondo, you have ITF Taekwondo, but then you have other different styles of Taekwondo. You know, you don't have to be WTF or ITF or Budokwan to be Taekwondo. That's what they try to intimidate you into, but absolutely not. No, absolutely not. But everyone has their different method, their different applications. But, you know, Taekwondo sparring, there's a lot of kicking. There is a lot of kicking in Taekwondo sparring. That's the biggest thing that I've seen. A lot of sparring, a lot of kicking, whereas karate seems to be more kickboxing. It's mixed, you know, 50-50. Whereas it seems like Taekwondo is more, you know, 80-20, you know, 80% kicks, 20% hand techniques. Okay. So that's the biggest thing that I've seen.
All righty. Well, you know, and sometimes a practitioner may develop more on, if they're in karate, they may, or Shotokan or Goju-Ryu, they may particularly like to do more kicks than punches, and vice versa. I've seen some Taekwondo practitioners that can kick really great, but they seem to like to use their hands a lot more, and then they got these wonderful kicks also. So I think a lot of it also is the practitioner, but basically as an art, Taekwondo is kicking. And I love the different kicks that Taekwondo artists do and the different types of dynamics they do and the ability they can do these kicks with. It's like amazing to me. I'm like, wow. I want to do that. And I learned that through training, anything is possible, but you have to really train and get someone qualified to teach you to do these
things. You're going to have to work at it. Definitely going to have to work at it.
It ain't going to be just like looking at it on a video and being able to do it. So you got to go to the dojo or dojang. Also, the difference in karate, we may say the dojo, and Taekwondo or Taekwondo, they call it the dojang.
The Korean term for, you know, training hall or gym or studio. That's the Korean term, dojang. Or dojang. Some people call it dojang.
Okay. Well, enlighten me a little bit about the higher ups. You know, like in karate, you may have a sensei, and then you may have a, they're all senseis, believe it or not.
Yeah, you guys got some titles in karate, man. Well, I'm still learning.
Yeah, the titles I don't think is so important than the person that doing it, but I think the titles also represent something in karate that's kind of unique. Like if you have a Renshi, and that's more like your drill sergeant. And I think the way that the karate guys or wanted that or intended that to be, I could be wrong. Any of you guys out there listening, please get in contact with me on the way, and we can talk about this again. But they got these different levels. Like a Renshi is more like a drill sergeant. Okay. You know, you in there and he's like, you know, man, making it happen. Okay. And then you got your Shihans, which are basically master instructors, you know, and what that is, like a person and peers get together and get someone that title of Shihan, because you can be an eighth, ninth, you know, degree, but not be a Shihan.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of different, you know, the way I was taught, the way that title or that name or that position or you know, is given to the person. So, you know, the matter of fact, that the League of Shihans was a very unique organization to be in. It's like when I was training with the Department of Correction, became part of their emergency response team, which is a CERT team, which is a SWAT team, actuality, it really is. We're the one percenters. You know, so that's like a group of people that get together that not everybody, you know, it might be 1,000 people in there. It might be all kind of fish in the sea, but it'd be nothing without me. You know what I mean? It's like one of those kind of things, you know?
One of those kind.
Yeah, one of those kind of things. So in the Korean arts, so you got your sensei, which is all senseis, but what's the next, like, title or for master or thing like that?
From the previous system that I come from, there's only three titles. You know, first dan, second dan, third dan is kyo sanem. So basically, you know, instructor.
Okay.
And then you have fourth, fifth, sixth, and that's sabonem. That's master instructor.
Okay.
And so what people do is they take the instructor part out and they just say, oh, I'm master. But it really is really master instructor.
Okay.
And then you have seventh, eighth, ninth, which is grandmaster. Now, some systems do it different. Some systems say there's only one grandmaster. Some systems say grandmaster is eighth dan. Mm-hmm. Hey, what I say is whatever. To each his own. Do what you want with your system.
Yes, that's simple.
Respect to everybody. Do what you want with your system. That's just the system I came from.
Okay. All righty. Is it anything particular that you guys are doing? Or you have any... anything planned for the summer or any events that you got coming that we can come out and participate in or be a part of?
Yeah, you know, we have a self-defense seminar coming up on Saturday, July 27th.
Okay.
From 11 a.m. To 2 p.m. And that's just what it is, self-defense seminar. I run my seminars, I promote, I advertise my seminars a little different. I personally don't target martial artists. That's not my target market, right? And hey, at the end of the day, a martial artist, you know, they come to your seminar, you make the $50, they say, thank you, we loved it, shake hands, you'll see them next year.
Right.
But you get a person in there that's never trained before, they don't know anything about martial arts, but they want to learn self-defense, they come in, they pay the money, they love it, and then they turn around and either they want to join or they want to get the bring their children in. So I look at seminars a little different. My target market is always, you know, people who haven't been exposed to martial arts. However, I do love training with other martial artists because we always have something different to bring to the table. So that's what makes us great martial artists. The different things that are being brought to the table, the different things that we're learning. If you're a master and you're one dimensional, then you're not really a master.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
That's not my opinion. That's just the way it is.
That's just you're saying you can take that to the bank, right?
Now that check you can put in the bank.
Yeah, there you go. You can cash that one if you feel like it. You know, come on.
So Saturday, July 27th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And I will also be teaching a little business class. Class on how to refine your martial arts business. Bring your notebook. Bring your notepad.
I plan on being there. Believe me.
Bring your notepad.
Yeah.
So the address.
Being there, and what's the address?
The address is, you know, it's going to be right here at my academy. The address is 1018 8th Avenue West, Palmetto, Florida. The zip code is 34221. If you have any questions, you can give us a call here at the school at 941-681-8104.
Great. And you guys out there listening, please take Master Bivens up on that offer and, you know, look for it. I know it's going to be a great seminar. Do you have any particular weapons that you like training with more than others, or you just like training with variety of them? But like, say, if you had one to pick, which one would you pick for yourself?
It'd be the nunchucks.
That's
my weapon is the nunchucks.
We do
mostly in my academy. We do have some weapons that we teach here, but you know, we teach mostly empty hand here at my school.
Okay.
That's what we do mostly here, because you're not going to be walking down the street with nunchucks in your hand. You better not walk in the bank with nunchucks in your hand either.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have a totally different banking experience.
Yeah. And probably if you walk in there with a sword, they probably look at you kind of different too.
Yeah, you walking out with a katana and tell them you want to withdraw $3,000, they're probably just going to give it to you.
Yeah, they're probably going to, it probably.
Then you're going to bump into somebody on your way out.
Yeah, it probably be. You probably get that ride in that taxi that you don't want to get.
Yeah, you know, you're definitely going to get a free ride home.
Yeah. That might not be a great thing to do. So, Master Bivens, I see a lot of different, and I've talked to a lot of different people, a lot of different styles. when you start out teaching, in your opinion, who takes the martial art better? Do you feel out there's a girls taking to it, or the boys, or is the women taking to it more, or the men? Who focus more in it?
Oh, you got me in the hot seat now.
Yeah,
me.
I do. But, I put every guest in that seat, by the way. Every one of you.
Man, I'm in the hot seat. Okay, I'm in the sweat now.
Uh-oh, look out.
But based, again, let me set myself up here to be for safety. Based on my experience, it has always been females, hands down, every single time. Hands down, it has always been females that have focused more in my academy, that have put in more work in my academy. Because, you know, there's no secret. We see that martial arts itself is male dominated. So naturally, it's going to be harder for females, because people quite often, they don't want to take them serious because they're females. But if you look at people like Jessica Cooper, who brought her school from like five students to, we can't even count what she has now. She's doing her thing. You know, so you know, we always look over them, but she's proof that it can be done by a woman. And there's a few other females out there also. But in my school, my first black belt was a girl. First one. Yeah. And then my third and fourth black belts were girls. I have more girl black belts than I do boy black belts. I teach the same martial arts to every student across the board. So that means it's up to the student to grasp the material. It's up to the student to come to training. You know, it's up to the student to study and take the tests if they're all learning the same thing. And it's always been the girls in my school. But you know what? If you go to other schools and just sit down and watch, you'll see who's putting in the work. And it's usually the girls.
I got to agree with you, because just like you, more female black belts in my dojo than it is male. And I seem to come up with the idea that as a male, I already know how to fight. I'm pretty good at doing this. Yeah, maybe I can learn a little something, but you know, I already know what I'm doing. Whereas the females come in, they're trying to pick up that technique, trying to pick up what you're saying, and they're paying more close attention, so they're going to work harder at it, and in turn, they become better, more proficient.
Hey,
that's scary.
I love to see the females come in here. And I don't want to sound too brutal, but I love to see them come in here and throw the boys around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen them more than once.
Yeah.
More than once.
The boys come in with this chip on their shoulder. It's like, oh, it's a girl. I'm going to take it easy on her during sparring. And then he blinks, and somehow he's got kicked in the head, and his helmet's turned sideways, and he's trying to figure out what happened.
Man, I had one girl knock a guy out. She was so shy when she came in. And this guy was such a like, oh, I'm the man. And after she kept working, I mean, months. One day they're sparring. And so like you said, he like all cool and bip, bip. He hit the floor. He's like, I can't believe I got knocked down by a girl. Believe it.
Well,
it just happened.
That's why he got knocked down by a girl. If you looked at her as a martial artist instead of looking at her as a girl.
Exactly.
You wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah, and you'd have been more serious. You know, while we're talking about that, how do you feel about the older masters approaching the younger masters or black belts? How do you see that relationship?
Yeah, you know, I love hate relationship with that one. You know, based on some experiences, it's like this. A lot of them, we need the old school masters. We need them. We have to have them to help preserve that old way of teaching and to pass that down. We need that. But quite often, a lot of stuff that I've seen is, you know, a lot of these older masters, a lot of these older grandmasters, they'll latch on to us, the young charismatic masters, and they'll have us do this and that. But it seems like when we come under fire, someone tries to assassinate our character, all of a sudden, it seems like some of the grandmasters want to remain neutral. Now, I didn't say all of them. I said some of them.
Okay.
It's like they want to remain neutral. It's like, you know, sometimes, you know, it's like this. Sometimes you can just say, don't do it, without having to take a side. But I see a lot of stuff that goes on like that. It's like, you know, the masters are doing the work, and then when things start to go sour, grandmasters are nowhere to be found.
Well, you know? and that's really bad, because the older masters or the grandmasters or whatever, you know, they should be there as a voice of reason and try to make sure that these things are worked out and handled in a martial way, but with the same feeling of understanding, patience, and leadership, so that the younger masters, when it's their turn to help out in a similar situation, they know how to handle it. So it's unfortunate that they're being quiet, that they're not doing, you know, they're keeping that knowledge and all that wisdom they got to themselves, and that's no good. It really is.
I see some of them, some of the grandmasters, is they frown upon instructors that have big academies, that have big after school programs, but those are usually the ones that don't even know how to run a business.
They don't know
how to run a martial. They know how to teach martial arts, but they don't know the business part of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, maybe you should be a little more humble. Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing?
I think so. I
see him. You know, there's this gentleman right now. I won't say his name, but he's always putting something on his Facebook page and like going after some kind of instructor or going after some. One time he was trolling a female online.
Ooh, wow.
And I'm like, dude, you're a grandmaster. What are you doing? If you don't agree with what those instructors do in their schools, leave them alone. Just stay out of their school. Like, that's it. You know, I mean, this is easier than what we're making it out to be. You know, but again, this is a grandmaster here. And, you know, no matter what organization that you're a part of, when you're a grandmaster, you're definitely a representative of that organization.
Yes.
By default.
Yes.
By default. You can avoid that. You know, but he put a video up about 2 weeks ago. Talking about instructors that do this for money, but here he goes running around teaching private lessons for money. Look, man,
yeah.
You know, you're a teapot just like me. So stop calling me black. You know, you're
that's
this
it.
Too. You're getting paid to do this.
Yes.
You know, don't worry about what people charge. You run your business, make your money, man. You know, keep it simple. We can all get along doing this.
Yeah, and I think. You know, I'm sorry.
If somebody wants to teach, if a person wants to open up a dojo and teach blindfold underwater basket weaving and people want to pay them for it, hey, this is America.
Yeah.
Who are we to judge that person? You know, either one, you can try to do better than they can, or two, just leave them alone.
And, you know, the truth of the matter is, like you say, this is a free country to do what you want to do. And I think that a lot of times we forget that we have this inevitable right to, as long as it's not hurting no one, defrauding anyone, and things like that, I don't think, you know, nobody have the right to tell you what you can or cannot do. But, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. And I would like to have you back on a follow up, because I'm sure I'm going to get a whole lot of inquiries about what we talked about right now. I'm telling you, we are. And unfortunately, we only got like 3 minutes left to finish this up. But, Master Bivens, when I look out on the martial artists, and I probably told you this more than once, if I had somewhere to bring my kids to train, I would bring them there to train with you. And that's why I'm really happy about this seminar that you got coming up, because, you know, you can see inside the dojo, you're sincere about the students and training them. And I like that. And you martial artists out there that's in that area, you guys should really, you know, try to model yourself after this young man. And he's really doing a lot of things in the martial arts to help out the community. If you guys only knew, he's really humble about what he do in the background, but he's doing a lot for our children. And remember, these are the guys, the children is our future. And we want to make sure that they really do get the proper training and things like that. Now, the prejudiceness in the martial arts, you know how some styles, they claim to be better than others, and some system claim to be that system don't know nothing, or this instructor don't know this, that, and the other. For you guys out there listening, do not ever let anyone define how your pawn is. Because if you let them define your pawn, they're going to make your pawn smaller than their pawn. Because they want to be the biggest pawn and the biggest fish. You know, just believe in your dreams. Today we've had on the show Master Terry Bivens of Bivens Taekwondo up there in Palmetto, Florida. And it's my honor to have him on. And anything else you'd like to say to him before we get off?
Hey, Monty, it's an honor to be acknowledged and recognized by you. Everyone that listened, if I mention your name, you have been a huge impact on my life on a personal level. And you're even those that I didn't mention, you're in my heart with me everywhere I go. So Thank you for having me on the show, Hunchy.
You're so welcome. God bless. And this has been The Way with Hunchy Henry Graves and Master Terry Bibbs. Us, no more, I got. Us, peace.